Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm Josh and I'm joined by Rory.
Hello.
Who you probably haven't seen behind the camera very much, but he quite often writes our news and dispatches. I think you've been on the podcast once before, but this is your your Contemplations debut.
Done a single interview so far, but
Other than that, sorry, I forgot about that.
That's all right. My first Contemplations.
So what we are going to talk about today is the view that music is becoming worse, and I think we both disagree about this, but we see it everywhere. And I've just kind of picked an article relatively at random which talks about this, and it cites a Spanish study where it's talking about how different aspects of music have supposedly dropped in quality. And we both have musical backgrounds, so I think it's probably better to talk about yours first, because you have a bit more of a stronger background than I do.
Well, I went to uni to do music. I did audio production and engineering, so the whole technical side of recording and making music with
all the stuff I don't know about.
Yeah. But other than that, I'm sure we're on the same.
Well, my experience is I pick up a guitar and plug it in and make noises, and that's what I've been doing for 10 years.
That's how I started as well. So.
Although I do have loads of guitar effects pedals, so I know a little bit of things here and there, but my experience is mainly going to be coming from as a music listener and someone who kind of understands the instrumentation behind it, right? And obviously I've spent a whole lot of time listening to music, as I imagine you have.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think we're relatively well qualified, although I'm not formally qualified, you certainly are. But anyway, moving on to it. So there's this article by Stereo Mono Sunday, not really heard of the website before, but it's a perfect example of the kind of view which you hear a lot, that music is supposedly becoming worse, and they're like, here are the reasons why. So this article's from 2019, but you see it everywhere. I think there's plenty of videos on YouTube which talk about this. I know in this article is embedded one by a YouTuber named 42, which has like 10 million views, and it's something that's circulating quite widely. I'm sure you've come across
42,
it. 42,
yeah, was that?
He's kind of Yorkshire bloke.
Yeah. What, did he agree with the article then, or was he?
He did a video and they included it as like part of their evidence. But anyway, moving on to the points that they actually make here. So they say the video cites, they're on about his video, which they have embedded in their article, cites a 2012 study by the Spanish National Research Council that concluded that modern music seems to be getting worse every year. Specifically, the researchers took 500,000 recordings of all genres of music between 1955 and 2010. And they ran every single song through a complex set of algorithms. These algorithms measured three distinct metrics: timbral diversity, harmonic complexity, and loudness. And obviously, we're going to be defining what those things are if you don't know the technical musical jargon, but just a few interesting things here. So, first of all, why is the Spanish National Research Council so focused on music in the first place?
I think,
why is that?
I'm pretty sure I looked at the study during uni, and I think it was collaboration with someone else. It could have been some sort of music union. Quite remember.
So
but
it was some other involvement. I was going to say they've got much larger concerns than sorting out music in Spain. Their economy is not the best. But anyway, I find it interesting as well that they've got 500,000 recordings. They don't necessarily specify how they selected for those. I imagine if I sort out the actual study.
I think what it was charts. Mm-hmm. It was like 50 of the chart hits every year for the past however many years. But something
that's
like that.
Intrinsically a selection bias, though. So I thought they'd probably go for the most popular songs, but by merit of being popular, they're going to have something distinct about them in the first place, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think what we will get to is that it's more that a formula has been refined for making popular songs rather than anything else. But moving on to the first part, which we are going to pick apart, is this first point about their findings. So they say, over the past few decades, the timbre of music has dropped drastically. So they say timbre is the texture, colour and quality of the sounds within the music being listened to. Do you think that's a fair characterisation? I think they've...
I mean, we can pick it apart later, but it will do for now.
Okay. So timbre variety peaked in the 1960s and has since been steadily declining. Songs increasingly have less variety in their instrumentation and recording techniques. Instead of experimenting with different instrumentation and recording techniques, the vast majority of pop music today uses the same instrumentation, a keyboard, a drum machine, a sampler, and computer software. Consequently, all modern pop music sounds the same. That's what they're saying here. And there's a lot to be picked apart here. First of all, they were talking about all music, and then just all of a sudden they're like, yeah, pop music, as if that's the only music that is worthy of concern here, which is interesting in and of itself. And the averaging out of timbre variety peaked in the 1960s as well.
I don't understand that point.
Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense.
I'd say the 80s was probably more diverse in terms of, well, timbre as they define it anyway, than the 60s.
Yeah,
just because of the introduction of synthesizers and, well, late 70s, 80s, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of losing a bit of nuance there, because also it's not like instrumentation, as soon as it turned 1970, like, right, we're gonna forget any timbral diversity. We're going to just use things that are very flat and dead.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. And if anything, there was a wider variety of things, as things like synthesizers and, you know, you got the Moog and things like that.
Digital reverbs come in as well, which are basically echo emulators in a basic sense, which can add color to a sound.
Yeah. So I think what people quite often forget is that the technology has improved so much as time has gone on, that options have become much, much wider. So to say that there's somehow some drop in variety, maybe in the sample that they've chosen, but I'm very skeptical of the actual sample that they've taken here.
Yeah.
So you could even say that, you know, the drop in timbral diversity could be because of the popularization of things like, I don't know, synthesizers and stuff like that, where it's more digitally focused, whereas with a conventional, like, stringed instrument, for example, which is something I do understand, when you play a note, there are lots of, you not only get the sound of the note, but you get lots of things called harmonics, which are just other notes that kind of around that note, along with it. And a digital thing might be more accurate in just playing the exact note, but it loses the kind of muddying. And
that's not to say that all synthesizing things post in the 70s and 80s were digital. A lot of them were analog,
of course.
I think digital came in early
1980s, 90s.
But
things like that obviously play a part, the equipment you're using, but surely having a larger palette of options doesn't necessarily mean it's getting worse per se. I think the timbre thing is a bit of a red herring, because as people got more and more options for making music, it didn't necessarily have to mean that they all of a sudden drop the analog instruments that had this kind of difference. And also, I mean, maybe having less timbre is a stylistic choice in the first place. And if that had dominated to begin with, surely that's a new novel and creative approach in and of itself. And that might lend itself quite well to, you know, fast-paced music, where you want it to be as clear as possible, and something that's got a very tight rhythm. You want it to make sense. You don't want everything bleeding into one another, unless that's what you're specifically going for. I don't know whether that all makes kind of sense to you, what your thoughts are.
I mean, songs in the 2000s especially became less diverse in timbre, but not in the sense of that they were worse, but that they were more minimal.
Mm-hmm.
They had less sounds in them, so that the engineers could then push the level and make them louder. Because obviously our whole loudness wars, I was going to speak about that later on, but...
We may as well talk about it now.
They say about loudness, how it's got louder. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
It has been for better and worse in some cases. Effectively what the loudness wars were when they brought in CDs in the late 90s. Obviously they had cassettes before that. Cassettes are the medium of cassette is you can only send a certain amount of level into it before it becomes hot and starts distorting. But with digital, that was a clearly defined like 0 point. You can push it to here and you can basically add a lot more what they call headroom to increase the volume of a sound or a track.
Mm-hmm.
So with CDs, you were able to push the sound more and more and more. And what they started realizing was there's a thing called the Fletcher-Munson curve. So at low volumes, the bass will sound a lot quieter. Higher frequencies sound louder. But as you bring the volume up, those will sort of start flattening out. It's to do with psychoacoustics, which I'm sure you know quite a bit. Well, as a psychologist, I'm not sure if you know anything about psychoacoustics and the perception
of sound.
I'm interested
in what you have to say about it, though. I mean, I did study the psychology of music, but
so from
imagine you come at it from a bit of a different angle.
Yeah, so from a level evolutionary psychology perspective, you'd obviously need to hear your friends or your tribesmen shouting
mm-hmm.
and screaming if you're hunting a mammoth, per se. I don't know. So the area of the human voice is usually between about 500 hertz, which is quite low in the spectrum, up to about 3,000 kilohertz, which is sort of high-ish, but not... Our hearing can go up to 20,000 kilohertz.
So it's kind of tuned to hear the human voice.
Yeah, and that's why babies cry, and that's at a very specific frequency, which is about 3,000 kilohertz, which is why it's so horrible to listen to. And it's actually quite funny because 3,000 kilohertz is the frequency we usually dip when we're EQing, so taking frequencies out of a sound.
So it doesn't play on that same like mechanism.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Is kind of built into your head.
It's very piercing and it's like not nice to listen to. So as I was saying, as you bring the volume up of a sound or a song, that curve starts to flatten out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Bass sounds louder. The highs sound a lot lower, and it sounds better. So what they were doing with the loudness wars is they realized loud equals better. So they just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. So obviously the record labels are all in competition with each other. They wanted basically to have the loudest song they could have. So by 2010, you had all that dubstep and Knife Party and I think Metallica, I can't remember what song it was, but I think that they brought out the loudest song that had ever been made at that point. But the issue is, what happens is when you push a song to that level, what you do is compress it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they do it, which is where you take the peaks of a song or what we call a waveform.
So there would be a wave and it would kind of squash it down. And is it right to say it would lose dynamic range? Is that the right term
dynamic
for
range.
It?
Yeah. So what you do is you basically push the loudest parts of the song down and bring everything else up. So if you look at the waveform,
it's more...
Yeah, it looks like a sausage, basically.
The peaks and the troughs are closer together than they would otherwise be.
Yeah.
And there's a small... Is it smaller amplitude? I'm having to go to physics now. This is a bit out of my wheelhouse, but...
The problem with that, however, is as soon as you start to squash a sound like that, especially hard, what happens is what they call a hard clip, where the waveform loses its sine wave, which is a curve sort of shape. Becomes more of a square wave like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is introduce distortions and horrible digital artifacts, which is why those loud songs don't sound nice. There's also the other issue of if you lose dynamic range, your ear becomes fatigued because there's no variation in the sound and your ear is
you're naturally hearing the same frequency for a long time.
Exactly.
And I think that's another evolutionary thing where if there's a consistent sound, there's no real reason to carry on listening to it.
Yeah, that's exactly
and
right.
And your brain kind of tunes it out and then you listen to other frequencies.
Yeah. Your brain is looking for variation, otherwise it just tunes the sound out, as you said. So, that's the loudness for.
So it seems like there was already kind of a market for this loudness war, so to speak, and it was only through technological innovation that it was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of implying that it's not really the kind of artistry that's getting
it's the labels to use a criticism, the capitalist aspect of the hyper capitalist aspect of the of the record labels.
I would call it corporatist that's the better term for it, because
the hyper competitive
Yeah. Because I'm a big believer in music being that comes from a major label, normally being watered down, derivative rubbish. And it comes from my kind of philosophy that if you want to make something appeal to a mass audience, you've got, kind of got to water it down. So there's no substance there that might rub someone the other way. But at the same time, it's also not going to be particularly exceptional either. But we'll get onto some more stuff like that in a second. But to relate the loudness thing to timbre, that's probably part of the reason why it's lost in more recent years, kind of since the dawn of, you know, digital things rather than analog in cassettes.
Yeah.
So that is not
completely black and white, but
But it has also started getting better as well, which is probably worth mentioning, in that I think people realise that it can only go on so long like that before people get fed up and don't want to listen to really loud stuff.
There's also the advent of streaming services, but we'll move on to that later on.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.